Good evening, everyone. You're listening to Recuperate at 92.7 FM, your community access radio station, Arrow FM. And look, we didn't talk, you know, I was told to just think positive thoughts as we came on air so as to ward off the evil of...
Yeah. That's true, but yeah. I also said, let's go and check the equipment, but we did some exercise instead.
I've hurt my back, hoovering. So, don't hoover. Don't hoover, don't clean, do any of those things. Yeah, just don't do them. Just kind of buy that service in because it hurts. It hurts, my back hurts, but I've done the McKenzie method. So thank you, Katie.
You're welcome.
Lean in, Katie.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So I think we need to be nice and close. Intimate. We're going to develop an intimate style this evening. Recuperate is sponsored by no one currently. And as you listen on, you'll realise why.
Oh, sell it. Oops.
If you want to be part of this happy band of mayhem, then please message the show. You can message us on recuperate@gmail.com and say, yes, I want to sponsor your show. It's very cheap. We're very cheap, but we're value for money. That's what I like to think, value for money. We've got a really good show coming up this evening, haven't we?
We have.
Katie,
yes.
Do you want to tell us what's going to happen?
We're going to speak to Jen.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely Jen.
Hello, Jen.
Hello, Jen.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, Jen.
With our regular spot for classical music appreciation.
That's right.
And this evening we're looking at violin and violin pieces.
We are.
Then later on we're talking to... Oh, we're running an interview that Lucy did for... I've forgotten his name.
Harry Watson. Local artist. Do you know Harry Watson?
No, I haven't met Harry.
He does really groovy stuff. And he does also a series called Not Art, which was affordable. So I bought some Not Art.
Ooh, I like it.
And he's got the Watson Gallery just around the corner in 2 Perry Street. Mm. Carry on, Katie. Carry on.
Then we're talking to... You're awful. And then we're talking mindfulness.
We are.
Because I was trying to be mindful today and I failed miserably.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh.
So Sarah Firth is going to take us through some mindfulness.
Yeah, we're going to talk to her about her business because she hasn't always been a mindfulness coach.
No.
So she's very much part of the zeitgeist currently, but she's not always been a mindfulness coach, and she is based in Martinborough. She's doing some really neat work down there with some other health practitioners.
Yes. With Love and Core.
With Love and Core, that's right, in Martinborough, Jellicoe Street, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've heard good things. A friend of mine's doing the course and loving it.
Oh, well, this is good.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to talking to Sarah Firth. So it's not jam-packed. I wanted to give Jen plenty of time. Because Jen, you are the woman of the moment. Before we go into challenging violin music, and some might argue the violin is challenging all the time.
I know.
Before we do that, can we talk about your show, which we talked about? You weren't here last month, but we did talk about your show on your behalf.
Thank you.
Ministries of Fate, the Miracle Room in Featherston. If you haven't been to the Miracle Room, get your ass down there because it's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's amazing.
It's a beautiful gallery.
Yes.
It's open on Saturdays from 10 to 2. Which sounds very limited, but that's a convenient time to go.
Absolutely, because you've got the wonderful market now. Well, you've had the market for a long time. I've just discovered it. So, hence it is new. So you can really have a full day in Featherston on Saturdays. You can go to the market, get your fresh fruit and veggies. We will talk about you in a minute. I'm just going to give the listeners everything they can do in Featherston.
You sell Featherston. Go.
And then you can then pop into the Miracle Room and look at some art, and then you can head off down to the bookshops.
Yes.
Of which there are many.
Several awesome bookshops.
Very awesome. Mm. Good value. But your show, Ministries of Fate, tell us about it, because you've only got a week left and you've got some pieces. You've nearly sold out, which is tremendous.
Nearly. So I was just going to look up a little statement because I just forgot to do that. But so Ministries of Fate is on through August. So however many Saturdays there are left in August. There might actually be a couple.
Two.
I think there are two.
Yeah. Two more Saturdays to have a look. So I'm a graphite and ink artist mainly. I do a little bit of mixed media. But this particular show, Ministries of Fate, is a drawing show. And what do people want to know about art shows?
Well, I mean, what was your inspiration for the pieces?
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. I was looking at my statement because it's hard to remember it off the cuff. Ministers of Fate. I was exploring fate. I won't rely on anything else. I was exploring the idea of fate. And do you buy into fate? And does it control your life? Or do you take control and just say, look, fate, I'm doing it my way.
Mm-hmm.
My way or the highway. And part of exploring that was thinking about Greek mythology, the fates, the three fates of Greek mythology. There were three of them, and that's why I needed to look this up, because I can't remember their names ever without reading them. So there were three fates.
Yep.
Let me do that.
Okay.
That up for you,
you do that.
Speak.
And one of them, and the three fates basically control what happens to you. One
yep.
of them spins the wool of your...
Clotho, the spinner.
The spinner. Clotho is the spinner.
Okay.
Spinning all the wool. The next person...
Lachesis or Lachesis?
Lachesis.
The allotter.
It weaves it together.
Right.
And then Atropos.
Atropos.
Inflexible.
Inflexible. cuts the thread.
Right.
When you least expect it.
Yeah, when you least expect it. But the thing with the fates is, I don't even know how we know this, because... The fates have such power, you can't actually ever know what they're doing.
Okay.
You never know. That's why we're all like, I leave it up to fate because I don't know what they're doing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Are they controlling everything for you? They're weaving your cloth and weaving your story,
yep.
and you're just like, you know, mindlessly going along.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, as Emma McCleary put it, she's like, you can believe in fate, but lean out a little bit so they can see you.
Oh, that's cool.
I know. I think that's a quote from a friend of hers.
I like
but
that.
But yeah, that was kind of perfect. Like, lean out. Like,
yeah,
I
yeah.
see you, fate. I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
So there's throughout the works that I've drawn, there are a lot of threes. There are groups of three people, perhaps all together,
mm-hmm.
looking at each other or not. There might be a group of three people where one person looks like they're doing a lot. They're like, ha ho hoo, I'm in charge.
Yeah.
And then two other people in that same picture, kind of like leaning back, looking like, no, you couldn't possibly be in charge. You just have to let fate happen.
Right.
Yeah. And so there's three people or...
The red thread.
The red thread is the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's another... There are lots of threes that show up in all of these pictures, not
yeah.
just three people. There might be a symbol on the shirt. There's a red pattern throughout the shirt, and it's the pattern of the fates, which is like a three little triangles stuck together. So there's lots of threes. The other thing that I was looking at was another culture's version of their fate myth. The Chinese have a red thread of fate, and that is where... There's an invisible red thread that ties the pinky of people, ties people together by their pinkies.
Okay.
And if we were tied together, that means that we are fated to meet.
Mm.
And there are undertones with this of like romance and marriage, because the particular god that looks after everybody's red thread is the god of marriage, as
right.
I understand it,
okay.
as I read it. But I kind of played with that and thought, okay, sure, maybe we're tied together. And maybe what happens if we don't recognize each other?
Mm-hmm.
What if we're tied together and that other person is wearing a mask? And so you're like, no, I don't think I must be tied to you. Or a lot of the, some of the pictures that I've drawn are just hands, not whole people,
yes.
just hands.
Beautiful.
And several of them have, they're two hands from one person and they're connected with a red thread.
Yeah.
So who's to say that you aren't, you know, can you be connected to yourself? Is that a thing?
Okay.
And we can kind of go deeper into that as well. It's,
yeah.
you know, a little bit of, are you connected to yourself, that self-determination sort of thing. But also, could there be some same-sex attraction kind of undertones to that as well?
Okay.
So lots of different ways that you can explore that red thread and how it's attached, how you're attached to other people, how you might be attached to yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought, yeah. Very
wow.
fun.
And as you were working on the pieces, did you explore those themes as you were working the pieces, or did you kind of have it all worked up in your mind and then worked on the pieces? I mean, did you mm. know, did the progression or your you know, getting really stuck into those kind of theories, I guess, did that develop as you were working on the pieces?
Yeah, that developed afterward. I started drawing some interesting collections of people and realized that I kept drawing three all the time.
Yeah.
And then knew that I wanted to call the show Ministers of Fate, because Lucy and I had a show a couple of years ago together, and one of the pictures, the mural that we drew and stuck a bunch of Lucy's photos to as well, had a little quote there from Shakespeare, which was, "I and my fellows are ministers of fate."
Mm.
And so I thought, ooh, yeah, I want to have a show that's called that. And then I thought, well, that's ridiculous. You can't just call it that thing and have nothing match the name of the show, like working backwards. But then I kind of went, oh, three fates. Mm. I'm doing lots of threes and three fates. And so, yeah, just kind of dove in from there.
Yeah.
And so after drawing two pieces, deciding that fate was something I wanted to explore, then that was in my mind as I was drawing the rest of the pieces throughout the show.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, it does look fabulous, doesn't it?
It's beautiful.
And we
it's a lovely opening night.
It was, wasn't it? It was really
fun.
Lovely. And there was a fire pit out in the back garden, and people were just milling about, and the kids were being, as we got out of the car, I said to the kids, you can be as weird as you like. We're at an art show.
Can't so good.
Yes. They didn't break anything. But it was really, because the room itself, the miracle room, is kind of tiny.
Yeah.
It's a tiny space, but it's kind of a TARDIS at the same time, because you can fit a lot in that tiny space.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
It's got high ceilings, but it's not very big. It's about 3.5 meters by 4.5 meters.
Mm. Yeah. And so destination bathroom. It's got a fabulous bathroom.
Oh, yes. Oh,
I never got to go to the loo.
Oh,
I know. I thought about going, and then everyone was going, can we go home?
Check out the facilities.
Yes.
It's got tessellated tiles from, like, I think 50s maybe.
Oh, lovely.
Or could be earlier.
Yeah.
I might get corrected on that. Yeah. And all the possible amenities you'd like.
Right.
You know, powders,
smelly
potions.
Oh, really?
Potions.
So not just soap and a towel.
No.
You have it all.
And lit by candle.
Oh,
candlelight as well.
Yep.
I think I heard Ellen say that's because Campbell hadn't changed the bulb.
Wow. We weren't going to mention that. We were
talk
about the magic.
They don't need to change it ever, because the candles were special.
Magic's magic. Well, Jen,
magic.
I wish you all the best for the last couple of Saturdays of your show.
Yes, thank you very
and
much.
And you've only got eight pieces left.
Six pieces left.
Mm. There you are. Me and Katie have invested.
And
you have.
I have the red thread.
You do have the red thread.
I'm very excited.
Can you describe it for us, Katie?
I can't remember.
It's
got a space person
individual
floating down the bottom, but it's individual pieces linked by a red thread.
Yeah.
So it's four small pencil sketches, and they're all linked together with red thread that's sewn into the pictures and connects them all together.
Yes.
So you can spread them out as far as you want, or you can move them in close to each other.
I was wondering about installation. I might have to get you to come and
have a little play. The threads are a little bit adjustable. So.
Yes.
Ooh,
yeah, so that was quite fun to go almost sculptural instead of just drawing by adding
I was drawn to it straight away.
Mm.
And we will get to violins, don't you worry.
Oh, yes.
Don't you worry. I'm not delaying those violins much longer, but I do want to know, because the next thing you're working on is something that other people can also work on, which is tea. I can't remember the rest.
Small works. Yes.
Can you give us a bit more about that?
Sure.
I know I didn't tell you were going to have to talk about all these things.
I know. And you know I like to be told 2 months in advance. So I've been involved with the Featherston Community Center for several years, and every year they do an art show fundraiser. Well, this year, those are usually in May, so of course this year we were in lockdown, so we couldn't get together and have a fundraiser. So now that's coming back to life, and we've decided to do a show where all of the works are 200 millimeters by 200 millimeters square, or 200 mil cubed if you're a 3D artist.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So it's nice you've made allowances for people who want to
absolutely
explore different planes.
Well, yeah, and we want people to push those boundaries as well. Like, how far can you push the boundaries within a 200 by 200?
How big were the bad art little, you know, what it was called that Loco did?
Oh, the bad art competition?
Yeah. Were they similar
they
size?
Some of those were smaller.
Oh,
some of those, 200 by 200.
It's about that.
Can anybody see me out there?
No,
it's about this big. It's my spread hand will cover it.
Yeah.
So, we'll be showing we'll be showing those boards on Instagram if you follow Featherston Art Sale.
Yep.
On Instagram, we'll gradually be showing some pictures of what those boards look like.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So the registration for that has just opened. So artists are invited to register now by going to featherstoncommunity.org website, mm-hmm. and log into the click on the ET.
Yep.
Link. It's $20 for 4 boards. Or $40 for 8.
I got 8.
Oh, me too.
I know.
Sounds like such a bargain.
I know.
So it's open to anyone. You don't have to be a...
You don't have to be an artist. No.
But,
you know, with the aim that they are going to be sold, each piece will be $150. So there's this uniformity throughout the whole show, which is exciting and kind of cool.
Yeah.
So they're all the same size.
All the same price.
And so
wow.
If you make 4, if one of them sells at $150, you'll get $100. $50 will go to the center.
Wow.
So it's really fun. Super fun. And the installation, I think, will look spectacular because we will have hundreds of pictures.
And it'll be at the community
all
center.
All the same size. And it'll be at the community center at 14 Wakefield Street in Featherston in November. But so registration's open now.
Yep.
The show is in November 14th.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jen.
Yeah. So
thank
please,
you.
Artists out there, register. It's fun.
And it's so affordable.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
I just entered a competition. It was very expensive.
Oh.
Yeah.
What was that?
Oh,
the Iris.
Yeah,
awards.
The Iris Awards. And you know, I have zero hope. But it just felt like an investment into doing something. You know, doing something.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I felt like I needed to.
Yeah,
do something.
Gives you a goal, and then you're committed.
That's right, you're committed,
yep.
and then the humiliation and the pain follows. Jen, you're here because of violence.
Of violence.
Now, Katie once won a scholarship. A scholarship. We're just going to leave it that for playing the violin. So, and how old are you, Katie?
13.
Oh,
fabulous.
And how quickly thereafter.
You're like mocking me, but.
No, I'm not mocking you. I'm very proud. I'm very proud. It's a side of you I didn't know.
It's the pinnacle of my achievement.
How soon thereafter did you stop playing the violin? Was it like.
I played it through my college years.
You did?
Yeah.
So you're pretty damn good.
I wouldn't, not anymore. I haven't played it for a long time.
Do you have a violin?
Yes, my husband bought me one for a wedding gift. I never touched it.
Oh, my God, that's lovely.
Hello.
Get this woman some lessons.
I know.
And you don't play the violin, do you? You're a cello player.
Yep.
Yes.
I play the cello. Mine is also just in my cupboard. So I mostly appreciate music.
I have a flute. Mine is also
I
in
feel
a cupboard.
Like oh, we could get together.
Sounds like
We've
a band.
A trio.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So tell us about, I mean, you love the violin, don't you? Are you a fan?
Mm.
Yep.
Yep, I'm a fan.
Mm.
What do I like about the violin? I like them because they're kind of the fun melody. You know, they're kind of the soprano voice of the world, and so they get that fun melody sort of part of music that can cut through a lot of other sounds so that you can really hear what's going on.
Yes.
And they're small, they're portable.
Yes.
You know,
not like the double bass.
Mine had power inlay, which I thought was pretty cool.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Blimey, that sounds really cool.
Wow.
Mm. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Showing off now.
So super portable.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It was a
and I think
one.
I just really it was a school one and it had power in it.
And I dropped it by accident and it broke.
No.
Oh no, I broke the scroll. The scroll came off.
Oopsie.
And I think my parents had to pay quite a lot of money to get it fixed.
Jeez. Is that something you just don't talk about? Don't revisit?
Until now.
I temporarily forgot we
were
on the radio.
That's why the violin is still in the cupboard.
Oh, man.
Oh, dear.
So it really is it the show pony of the orchestra? You know, is it kind of like the flashy sort of,
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
Of the string instruments, anyway.
Yeah.
Because the concert master or concert mistress, maybe they don't call them mistresses anymore. Concert master is always a violinist.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's always the first violin. And that's the person that if the conductor keels over in the middle of a piece, they'll hop up and take over the conducting.
Wow.
And it seems to always be a violin.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, and they always get the great solos. You know, like the soprano solos are always just like go on for ages and they're beautiful and everybody's like,
Twiddly. So twiddly.
Very twiddly.
I love the twiddles.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, the violin solos are crazy good because they can play quickly.
Yes. Well. Yeah. Well, sometimes they play. It sounds like they're playing five violins at once. Yes. I mean, how they do that, I do not know. But yeah, we might even hear some of that. Mm. And is there just different types of violin? So is there like a bass violin or a,
well, a viola?
There's a viola, which would be like the lower voice. So there's the violin, which is kind of the higher sounding one, and then the viola is a little bit larger instrument and has the lower keyed strings. So it's a little bit lower, a little bit more voice-like.
Mm-hmm. Mellow.
Mellow.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm. And then there's cellos, which are lower.
Yep.
And then the double basses, which are so incredibly low.
Yes. Yeah. I love the double bass.
Yeah. So violin is a, I think, I mean, so anybody out there can prove me wrong because this is like in the mists of time, my mind. But, you know, a violin's a violin. They do come in different sizes. Like small children would have like a half-size violin.
Okay.
But it'll still have the same, it'll be strung the same. It'll still have the same G, D, A, and E strings on it. It's just maybe a little bit tinier.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're going to, should we head into some music? Shall we?
Yeah. So the playlist, I thought because part of New Zealand is in a little bit of lockdown at the moment, so I thought we could play some cheerful kind of pieces today instead of really challenging ones that might bother anybody. We'll play some cheerful things. But still, I wanted to kind of explore, while traditional classical violin might put some people to sleep, there are some people, composers, I know, not us, of course.
Not us.
There are some people out there in the past and now that are kind of pushing those boundaries a little bit to make it a little bit less vanilla.
Yeah.
In a way.
Okay.
So, and those, you can push those boundaries in different ways. So I wanted to start with some Vivaldi, which a lot of, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, which lots of people are familiar with, and even some people are like, oh, it's a war horse, and you even hear it in commercials.
Mm.
But Nigel Kennedy, we'll hear Nigel Kennedy play a couple of movements, and he's an English violinist. He's about 60 now, but when he was...
He's not.
Yeah.
I still think he's 25.
Yeah,
oh, my God, that's ridiculous.
And he was so exciting when he came out, because when he first kind of came onto the scene... Because he was so different. He was
incredible.
Like,
I remember,
he was the bad boy.
I was like, wow, what a dude. He had an earring in one ear and a spiky hair.
Spiky hair.
He used to wear, like, colourful cravats.
Yes.
He was quite outlandish.
And his style of playing was, like, really frenetic.
Yeah.
He played with his whole body.
Yeah, he was really into it. And he wouldn't wear tails. He was like, those aren't natural.
Yeah.
And the first time I heard, you know, a classical music say, I'm not wearing that, I was like, oh, my God. I like him so much.
Yeah, I fangirled him when I was little.
And, okay, and listen, aside from just talking about how he looks, he's great.
He's incredible.
So good.
Yeah.
So he'll play some of this Vivaldi, and he just nails it and goes, and quite fast as well.
Okay.
And we'll contrast that with a modern composer named Max Richter, who has recomposed some Vivaldi. So he'll take Vivaldi to this modern minimalist sort of space where he's taken the Vivaldi Four Seasons. He's used about 25% of it, and the other 75 is him mixing and layering and making it almost electronica. It's great.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think the way I've lined things up is first we'll hear Nigel play, like, Spring, and then we'll hear Max Richter's version of Spring.
So, Quattro Stagioni.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, lovely. So, you're listening to Recuperate. We're currently being entertained enormously by Jen Olsen, who is an artist and a musician. We're talking violins. We're going to go straight into some Nigel Kennedy and Four Seasons. Here we go. Any minute now. Thank you. Nigel, you did good. Hey, that boy can play, can't he?
Isn't he fast?
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Just a question for you there, Jen. Mm-hmm. To what extent, I mean, Vivaldi wrote down the notes mm-hmm. as he wanted them to be played, but how much would an individual artist, you know, do some extra flourishes or twiddles or at their own interpretation?
Mm. Well, Vivaldi's the Four Seasons, it's been around for such a long time, I think, between whenever that was, 1740s, and now people would try to add their own personality to it. I think, and it depends on the person. Nigel Kennedy obviously, sounds like he really added a lot of kind of speeding up and slowing down that suited him.
Yeah.
Where you may have heard other recordings of it that are quite structured.
Yes.
So, you know, I think it depends on the people interpreting what Vivaldi wrote down.
And can people in the music world can they get sniffy about that?
Yeah. And you know what's funny about Nigel Kennedy? You know, we were saying before he's the bad boy and all these kinds of things. But people will get very sniffy.
Yeah.
So there's a range of people that were like, classical music, traditional classical music sounds like this, and it's you play it exactly as it's written.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there might not, you know, no discussion. And then there might be people in the middle ground that are like, well, there is some discussion, because who's to say that you know, this tempo here is actually what the composer originally wrote down. Maybe that's changed over a few hundred years.
Yeah.
You know, so there's discussion in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, some people get sniffy and other people think we need to let it evolve.
Yeah.
You know, with the times.
Yeah.
And with Nigel, because he was quite unorthodox, and he got up the establishment's nose just because he dressed differently.
Mm.
And so when he was first coming to prominence, people got really sniffy about the way he dressed. And they got so sniffy about it, because he refused to wear tails, that they started translating that into, oh, and his music, I just don't hear it anymore. It just doesn't wow me anymore.
Oh.
But you know, other people were like, what are you even talking about? And of course, it's amazing. He's really great.
Yeah.
And but people got so hung up about his clothes that they got quite sniffy.
Ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, like, give him a Google, because there are some, you know, he obviously would, I mean, and I would too, if somebody got sniffy about what you were wearing, you would try it on, right?
Yeah, that's right.
There was one that I found where he's got this, like, kind of weedy, wispy beard, and his hair is quite long, and he's wearing this really raggy-looking jacket and really baggy clothes, and then he plays, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So, you know, so who cares what he looks like? But, you know, the rest of the orchestra with him are all in their tuxes and tails.
Yeah.
So funny.
I'm just going to ask, I don't know if this is a controversial question, but to what extent do you think clearly people got a bit cross about it, but he was a guy, kind of, you know, like, he was a man bending the rules. Are there any women that have similarly bent the rules around, you know, sartorial...
Maybe
Garp?
Vanessa May, but she probably crosses over to
pop.
I mean, you know, she's more considered a popular artist who's included classical into popular rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
Pop rather than popularizing classical music, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. But
I don't know of any...
I don't know.
Like a female equivalent of Nigel.
Mm.
I don't know.
Because often
haven't seen any.
The artists with orchestras have to wear, like, really full-on ball gowns, eh? Like...
Yeah, how they managed to do all that in a bodice.
Yeah. But the full skirts and everything.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Full skirts would be all right, because you can move around a little bit.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But like, ball gown tops.
Yeah.
Especially with a violin, because you're like up.
Yeah.
You know, your lats are working, and it's a physical instrument.
It is.
You know, wow, so. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You wouldn't want to be popping out of anything, would you? Mid-concerto. So what are we going to listen to next? We're going to listen to that piece, but by...
Yeah, so Max Richter's version. No, Max Richter isn't playing, but he composed it and is directing.
Okay.
We've played it. He's a favorite of mine, so I've played a lot of his stuff over previous shows.
So this is the same, basically the same movement that we just heard from Nigel.
Okay.
But this is Max.
I'm going to hit play. Mm.
Wow.
It technically killed me. Oh, my God.
I do feel a little bit teary.
I feel goosebumpy. Isn't that good?
That was beautiful.
That was incredible. So we were, while this music was playing, we were all going, oh, my God, I think I'm going to cry. But, you know, and as Jen said, I said, hold that thought. Hits you right in the feels. And you also went on to say, you know, sometimes you can't explain why music does that. And that, you know, like that, you'd want that as a soundtrack to your life all the time, wouldn't you? We're playing it in the car on the way home, Katie.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. That was incredible.
Yeah.
Tell us some more about that, Jen. Just tell me more about that man and that music and that violin.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So first, that's the interesting bit of trivia, is that the person playing the violin in that recording, his violin is from the 1840s,
right,
which was the same time when that Vivaldi was around and composing the Four Seasons. So that's kind of a cool,
wow,
a cool little thread there. But Max Richter, so he's alive. He's a modern person, as mm-hmm. Katie pointed out. He writes a lot of music for movies.
Mm.
But he's a modern composer who works in this post-minimalist sort of style, meaning minimalist, where there's that steady kind of drone underneath. It kind of evokes electronica, sort of, where you've got the in the background, and he uses really even dynamics, so he doesn't go really loud and really soft. He might go from really soft to really loud, but he doesn't use dynamics to give you a lot of feelings throughout a piece.
Okay.
You get a lot of the feelings from all the overlapping of all the different parts.
Yeah.
So he does a lot of mixing. What does he do? What's it called? Anyway, lots of
I'm going to call it emotional
like
overlay.
Emotional
it's
overlay.
It's like the weaving of
it's
all those.
Really emotional.
There's sadness and hope and excitement and birth and death, and it's all in there, isn't it?
It is. It's totally in there. I like that it's his own interpretation, too, and that he thought he'd grown up listening to and playing Vivaldi, and then, you know, like you, probably got sick of hearing it in commercials and wanted to take it back a bit for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just thought all the feelings that he had when he played Vivaldi as a younger person, he thought, you know, how do I feel about it now?
Yeah.
And so he just decided to break it down, and it's a lot of, it's just a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, just lovely. Just lovely.
Yeah. It just takes, it takes like the traditional classical out for a bit of a spin.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how is Max Richter kind of observed in the formal art world, music world? Is he kind of...
I've read a lot of reviews about that particular album where the sniffy people thought, why would you ruin Vivaldi like that? Blah, blah, blah. You know, people who don't want you to touch it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well,
he would have opened it up to such a whole
absolutely.
I mean, the range of people who don't normally listen to classical music.
Yeah.
Yes. He's taken the stuffiness out of it, I think.
Yeah.
And giving it that little bit of mixy feel.
Yeah.
But,
and I reckon Vivaldi would have appreciated that.
Yeah.
You know, they were creatives, weren't they? That's why they wrote the stuff in the first place.
Well, and I think, you know, at the time, I'm sure Vivaldi's The Four Seasons were probably pretty different.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
I think if they knew that it was being made as a film score, so you got, like, hearing it, seeing it as a double whammy.
Yeah.
Because often I find pieces of music that... Often I find them through music scores. Like I'm watching a film, like, oh, that's pretty cool. Shazam it. And then, and then discover someone new that way.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
But just seeing it, hearing it,
it's brilliant. Pretty epic. Mm. That was epic.
Mm. Love it.
I love that.
So we'll get to hear some more. So the next one, we'll just do another Nigel Max comparison.
Okay, I like that, yes.
The next one, Nige plays for us part of Summer, from the Four Seasons.
Oh, yes.
And then we'll hear Max play his version of Summer.
Okay, so I've had that, and I think that's what I've got here. Right. If I'm wrong, Jen, you'll tell me to stop, but I'm going to press play on this track. Here we go.
Thank you.
off.
Can you imagine, like, fireworks everywhere?
Oh, man.
That was epic.
That's so...
Talk to us about the speed.
That's so fast. I know, I keep saying that. He's so very fast. But that's one of the fastest recordings I've ever heard of that piece.
Yeah.
But it's not out of control.
No.
You know, it's crisp and clear and
yes.
awesome. And he still just gets in the occasional... wow chord, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
I don't, it's so fun.
So when he's playing that fast, I mean, like, talk to me about how much practice somebody would have to do to get that fast. And what kind of things do you do to get that speed?
I think the hard thing with a violin, I mean, and I'm kind of, Katie can correct me here, because I play the cello, which the strings vibrate a lot more slowly, so it's harder to play that as fast as Nigel was playing in that. It would be quite hard. Harder for the cellist to play that fast.
And they're smaller and closer together.
Yeah, the strings are closer together.
When I learned, and I never got very good, but the keeping the sound clean, when you're crossing over multiple strings with a bow that fast, it's so clean and crisp, and
he's not mashing
anything together or touching anything.
No,
which is
he's not touching two strings at a time.
Because that's really hard when you're starting to learn to play the instrument, is to like... the tone, such good tone.
Yeah, and the clarity.
And, like, dexterity of moving the bow so fast but not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
and
epic.
To me, the fingering, too, is the hardest thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Every single one of those notes, he's, like, placing his fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, that would be the hardest. Because, like, with the bow and the strings, at least that's, like, four strings that you need to keep track of.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm simplifying totally. But then the finger's like, just going crazy all over the place. It's so fast.
Wow.
The response from a violin is faster, which I was always jealous about playing the cello, because it's like,
But that's what I love about the cello, because it's contemplative and really hits your bass.
Gets you in the ribs.
It's buzzing in your chest cavity.
Yeah.
So that keeps the buzz, and then the violins just carry the tune.
Did you enjoy playing in an orchestra, Katie? Was that a real big buzz?
Yeah. School orchestra was pretty cool.
Yeah. I was in the school orchestra. Yeah. Me and Georgina Dryden were on flute. She'd play and I would mime.
Oh!
I'm sorry, Georgina. I think she knew.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people knew.
Oh, mate. I got so nervous,
and then I could blow across the flute.
Of course you couldn't.
Yeah, no.
It's breathing.
Exactly. It's like with the violin and the cello,
you can't hide.
If you're like pretending to play, it shows. Or you accidentally hit the strings and go, oopsie.
I remember playing like the national anthem, and I would just play like, and then towards the end, and then maybe the last two notes.
That's making me flip for you.
Oh, I tell you what, I loved it. Oh dear. Right, well that was incredible. Can I just ask another question? What kind of injuries can you get from playing?
Terrible RSI,
whatever
they call it now.
Yeah, yeah.
My violin teacher RSI. had to stop. He was in the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra.
Carpal tunnel.
Oh man. Yeah.
And I always thought I've had a bad upper back and neck for like a long time, and I thought, well, I'm relieved I didn't play the violin, because it's also
your neck.
You hold it between your collarbone and your chin.
Yeah.
So like having your neck at some weird angle.
Are violinists often can they play it on one side or the other or both or?
I guess so, but not traditionally. You hold it in your left hand, and your right hand is the bow hand. I mean, people do spin it around, but not very many.
No.
What's Nigel? I'd be interested to find out.
If he was like, he looks like traditional to me.
Yeah, I don't know. He might have mixed it up.
He might be left-handed. Now that I've said that, he's going to be all, no, I'm not. I play it however I want.
Hang on, we've got a call coming in from Nigel.
Oh, Nigel. You shut up, Jen.
Cello player.
Yeah.
Right, what are we going to be treated to next? Because, oh my gosh, the pain in my back is gone.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so that was Nigel playing the summer movement.
Yep.
And now we'll hear Max doing his version of summer.
All right, let's do it. All right, I'm going to put this on and here we go.
Just fangirling over here.
Oh, I know.
Oh, I'm unnecessary. I'm having hot flush. I don't know what to do with myself. That was epic. I mean, that was like Apocalypse Now. You know, that was brilliant. People are loving this, by the way. Oh, I'm just going to, Megan Savage, Buccello is so sexy.
Isn't it?
Hello, Mum. Hello, Sis. Just got to say hello to my family. Hello, Deb. Lovely to be joined by you. Sean and Charlotte Harding, who has sent us some really interesting information about something violin-related that's happening in Martinborough, which I'll talk about later. But let's just talk about that piece of music, Max Richter.
Oh, my God!
How does he do it? How does he do it? All the layering and just that electronica end to that one kills me. It's just gorgeous and just leaves you sort of like wondering if your heart's beating at the wrong speed or like your heart kind of skips a little bit to catch up to it and that clearly some traditional classical purists might just hate that.
Would struggle, it was so lovely watching Katie while the music was playing because you were totally there. You were, you know, like you were just and really listening.
He's my hero.
What was going on for you when that music was playing? What were you, you know, because you were talking.
I see visual images for sure. Yeah. And I think about what kind of film that would suit and what I'd be looking at while I heard that.
Yeah.
It's definitely a visual connection.
Do you get colours?
No, I always see pictures. Mm. Unless I'm listening to his sleep stuff. So he's done an album called Sleep.
Oh.
And he's done the Blue Notebooks. He's done so much stuff. I'd totally recommend anybody to check him out because he's prolific.
Okay.
And you'll find him in so many film scores.
Yeah.
And the Blue Notebooks was in Arrival, the movie about the spaceships.
God, is that the aliens that do the coffee cup stains?
Yes.
Yeah, and she tries to speak to them in language.
That was a lovely film. I enjoyed that film very much.
Clearly.
And he did Ad Astra. Have you seen Ad Astra? The space movie with Brad Pitt.
No.
Potato? No. Brad Potato?
Is that Brad Pitt?
Yes. Oh. I haven't seen it either. I didn't want to see it, but now I want to see it just for the music.
I'm pretty sure he's in it. I better chubby
check. I heard it was kind of weird.
Well, that was great. Do you know what I like to? I like looking at ordinary scenes of life whilst playing massive music like that. Just looking at people like trundling around doing their thing, and it's amazing how people are, you know, unconsciously going with the beat. You know, like whatever they're doing, having a row, you know, robbing something, just mooching along. You know, they all seem to have this innate sense of rhythm.
If only they knew,
absolutely. Oh, give us another, Jen, give us another.
Oh, man. Well, we could just listen to Max Richter all night.
Well, but we could. There are others.
So that was a fun example of how people are pushing classical music into new places.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I love, you know, and that's relatively tame.
Yeah.
You know, still, it still sounds classical-ish, right?
Yes. What are you going to give us next?
I know. I'm not going to go too crazy this time because we're staying really, like, gentle. Today we're staying gentle for lockdown buddies.
Okay.
Next time we'll do some really out there stuff because I had a great conversation with Campbell Neal the other day at the Miracle Room and we talked about really the pushing the boat out kind of classical which, again, I have no words for it, but sort of like a few months ago when we played 2001 A Space Odyssey mm-hmm. music.
Yes.
And there was that choral piece.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which I loved and you hated. Do you remember?
Yeah, it makes you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just doing things with voices. They were just people's voices, but holy cow, somebody can make them do crazy things that make you feel really strange or really, like, fascinated.
Yes.
So, yeah, next time, let's explore.
Take us to the edge, Jim.
Yeah, we're gonna go well. We're
going to go well blankie.
Over the edge.
Yeah, yeah.
I know, yeah.
Hot water bottles and Valium.
Wear your cozy clothes, and we'll bring some snacks. Just, yeah, but so this time, we did the Vivaldi game there. The next thing I wanted to look at was, so Vivaldi wrote that stuff in whenever, 1740 thingy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
1700,
right?
Yeah, 1740 thingy.
Nearly 400. Wait, how's my math? Nearly 300 years ago?
Yep. Rising 400.
Yeah, lots of years ago. And then Max Richter right now is making that anew for us, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
1725.
God, that early.
Well, written in 1716 and published in 1725.
Oh, thank you.
Whoa,
wow.
There you are.
Older than that, longer ago than I thought.
So, sorry.
So the other day on, I think, radio, what is it called now? RNZ concert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I heard a Peter Warlock song. So Peter Warlock is a fellow who was active around the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a whole lot about him. Well, he was kind of interesting and different as well. People thought he was a bit strange. Peter Warlock, what a name, right?
Yeah.
Not his real name.
Oh.
So he was born Philip Heseltine.
Oh.
And any relation to the Heseltines of London?
The
politician Heseltines? Yeah.
Possibly, because he was born somewhere there. Where was he born? I didn't write it down.
What's his name? Peter...
Peter Heseltine.
Peter Warlock.
Oh.
Yeah, but he was a bit different and got into the occult and things like that.
Okay.
Which people did in, you know, 1915.
They loved
that was
all
a
that.
Really cool thing.
Yeah. Oh, look at him. He looks interesting. Should I hold that up for a picture?
Yeah, do.
For our viewers. Hello.
Hello, camera.
Camera.
He was a musician and a music...
He does look, but he's quite good looking.
He looks elfin.
Elfin, yeah. Yes. And for some reason, the camera will not go to Katie. It will not go there. Why is that?
All right.
Anyway, you can look him up. Peter Warlock.
Yeah, look up Peter Warlock. So one of the things he wrote was the Capriole Suite.
Mm.
And it was 16th century dances kind of reanimated for the 20th century.
Okay.
And he was another person that seemed kind of like an unhappy person. Some of the history I've read about him, he had a lot of depression and possibly died by his own hand.
He didn't live very long.
No, he didn't live long. He didn't reach 40.
Gosh.
So, yeah, he seemed to struggle a bit. And I think in his music, it kind of shows in this particular bits of this piece that we'll listen to.
Okay.
It kind of showed. But also kind of showed that he was struggling to make something a bit different.
Yeah.
You know, that taking that classical... to that next step a little bit and making it a bit of his own.
Yeah.
And I think he does that, you know, to me.
Okay.
He may not have been happy.
So
intrigued.
The Capriole Suite, Peter War of the Lock.
And we're just playing a couple bits of it.
Okay.
Not the whole Capriole Suite.
All right. 1 second, bear with me, caller.
Elizabeth.
That was a hard stop. Sorry, Peter. You didn't design it like that. That was lovely. That was very compared to Nigel, we were on a little bit more of a contemplative mode there. So talk to us about that bit of music, because you were saying while the music was playing, you know, that it's slower than you would expect from the 1600s, but it was kind of reminiscent of that.
Yeah, so it's reminiscent of the 1600s dances, like the partner dances that Katie was mentioning. Mm-hmm. You know, you can imagine a whole bunch of people with the high bodice gowns and things.
Yes, in the court,
having their dances, bowing to these people. And yeah, but it's a little bit faster
yeah.
than that. And some of the chords were just a little bit different mm-hmm. to the 1600s. And then at the very end there, those few, he goes a little bit nuts and puts a few notes in there that if the 1600s people were there, they'd be like,
right.
That was totally wrong. So he's added a little twist to the end there.
Okay.
And I quite like it because it is still lovely and sweet.
Mm.
And it's a little bit different, but not too terribly different.
Yeah.
But then the next one, so that was the first movement called the... I'm not going to say this right. The bass dance, the bass dance, and then the next piece is sixth movement, which is the sword dance. So it's a little bit faster, a little bit more exciting, and definitely more different.
All right, crack straight on.
Give it a crack.
More of the tortured soul. That was cool.
Yeah,
that was
like
great. I could
That's
see,
cool.
you know, a little bit more of the angst in there. You know, if he was experiencing any, then you know, maybe when he was writing, it was coming out. It was that was cool. I
like
that
and exciting too. Like I need a loud chord here. I'm going to use these notes. I'm going to play the ones that I want.
Yeah. Oh, it was great.
Fun. So dissonant and strange.
Yes.
Not typical chords.
Yeah.
It was a little bit.
Hey, I've got a little piece of trivia.
Go on.
Mr. Warlock founded and edited a journal called the Sackbutt Journal. I just had to look it up, check that
the
I was. Sackbutt. Which was an early form of trombone used in Renaissance music.
Oh,
well,
isn't that cool? Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, funny. He was a music critic, and I read too, which maybe that's what he was doing, was making his own music critic journal, because he would pan a lot of stuff, apparently, because it just wasn't, you know, he was obviously striving for something a bit different, so a lot of music didn't satisfy him, and the journals that he was sending him to wouldn't publish his stuff, because they're like,
so he
you're
made
just
his
too
own.
Grumpy.
Good man.
Yeah.
Like it.
What's next, Jennifer? Do we have many more to go?
No, we're getting there. No, actually. So the last one is a super modern movie music, which I just love, and showcases the violin.
Mm.
So everything that we've heard has really beautiful violin-y piece, you know, parts. And I like that, because that violin just stands out so well. It really helps carry the melody throughout the whole piece really well. And it's easy to hear and pick out, you know, because it's high. So Hedwig's theme... From which one is this from? This from the Harry Potter movies.
That's this the owl, is it?
Yeah, Hedwig is this owl, and this is from the Philosopher's Stone movie. So it was originally from 2001, but this recording, they redid it in 2019, maybe to add to one of the more recent of the Harry Potter films. But they won a Grammy for the best arrangement.
Right.
Of this, so it's written by John Williams, who also has written like
the godfather of every film ever.
The godfather of films. You know, he's written, he's the most prolific film composer. He's written for Star Wars, Schindler's List, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T., Indiana Jones, Jaws,
wow.
Jurassic Park. Yeah,
all
you
the things,
have
the
you have guns. Heard John yeah. Williams
yeah,
probably
yeah.
throughout your life, right?
Yep.
So he's written Hedwig's theme as well, and a violinist called Anne Sophie Mutter, a German lady, is playing it, and it's quite fun because it's just a violin showcase, and it's a beautiful narrative. So it's Hedwig's theme. Hedwig is Harry Potter's owl, and so you can kind of imagine what this owl is doing while we listen to it.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Thank you.
Boom, boom, boom. Much.
Oh,
so fun.
Potter fans will be losing their minds right about now. That was
wow.
wonderful. Now, Katie, you picked out there that they were doing what? You know, with their fingers.
Oh, pizzicato.
Pizzicato. And that's when you...
Pick.
Pluck the strings.
Pick, puck.
They
puck,
are garrulous.
Pick, puck.
where they're garrulous when the music's playing, and then you ask them to explain something and they clam up. I mean, come on.
I know. It's plucking.
It's exciting. So she's plucking the strings a lot, and she's all over the whole instrument. At the beginning, you can just, I don't know. She's going from the bottom string all the way to the top string.
Wow.
In just so quickly.
Mm. Yeah. So there's pizzicato, which is plucking with the string with your actual finger.
Yes.
And then there's arco, which is tapping the, which is kind of the same, different, but a slightly different sound, where you tap the string with your bow.
Okay.
To get a similar sound, but not quite as
plucky.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Not as pronounced as plucking.
Mm. Right. Gosh, well, that was brilliant.
Isn't she great? It's such an emotional ride, that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, you can imagine that lovely owl kind of flitting around and being owlish.
I've never seen any Harry Potter films, so I can't.
Haven't you?
No.
Well.
Just the first couple, and you're good.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Really?
Yeah, the first ones.
How many are there?
105.
You'll be upsetting some Potter fans.
Sorry, Stan.
And there's one which is really quite dreary, where they just seem to be going through a very dark studio for, you know, several hours.
Is that when he was
at his midlife? Yeah, it's kind of teenage times. Angst, yeah. Jen, that was tremendous.
Very enjoyable.
While you're here, we did have our wonderful friend of the show, Charlotte Harding, let us know that the Medici Lectures are back. So it's Medici Cafe in
Martinborough.
Thank you, Martinborough. And for $20, you can get mulled wine and nibbles. And on the 20th of August, which is in a few days' time, Alan Clayton joins us, a local instrument craftsman, or luthier. You did mention luthier. Oh, yeah. I thought his name was Luther.
Oh, no. How uncouth. So uncultured.
I didn't know they were called luthiers.
Yeah.
There you are.
I thought it was just guitars. Is that?
Stringed instrument.
String instrument.
So he's going to be there on the 20th. So you can check them out by going to Medici Cafe on Facebook. And it starts at 6 o'clock, goes on till 8 o'clock in the evening. And that's the 20th. And so that's Alan Clayton, luthier.
Awesome.
So that sounds marvellous, doesn't it?
There's a great bunch of classical people down in Martinborough, and they put on a music event each year that probably got cancelled recently.
Oh, because of COVID, yes.
Because of COVID, yeah.
I think we've interviewed that guy who put the Martinborough Music Festival on.
Yes.
1 year, yeah. So we'll try and put some links on our Facebook page,
And there's a cool, great classical music group in Greytown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure about Carter and the Masterton, if anyone wants to put us right.
Yeah.
Or where to go.
Well,
where
do
the place is to go.
Absolutely. And it would be really nice to get a bit of a community going around this show. So do visit us at Recuperate on Facebook and just let us know what's happening out there, eh?
Yeah.
Jen, I don't want you to go.
I don't want you to go either, actually. I'm really enjoying myself.
It's been really has been tremendous. I know what we're going to listen to on the way home in the car. Coming up, we've got the first part of my interview with, or our interview with, Harry Watson, and then we'll be calling Sarah Firth. Sarah, we will be calling you at some point this evening. Just hold tight. So, Jen, we'll see you again soon, friend of the show.
Look forward to be challenged next time.
Yeah, next time we're going to play some challenging classical music.
I'm looking forward to that.
Get ready.
We'll also put the playlist on our Facebook page as well tonight, so people can listen again and take their musical journeys from there.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to press play on this interview, and we are going to, let's just see. I hope this works. Hang on, let me just turn other things off. So Harry Watson runs a dealer gallery in 2 Perry Street, which is above Milady, the ladies' clothing store. And he really is a really lovely guy. His art is tremendous. He's kind of multimedia, mixed media.
Is the entrance on Main Queen Street, or...?
Yeah.
I would never have known there was a space above there.
Yeah, there is. So you go down the side of Milady, and he's up there. Mm. So it looks like a 1950s office building. It's pretty cool. Now, hopefully I'm going to press this and it's going to play. Yes, it's playing. Look at that. Mm. Enjoy. Thanks, Jen.
Bye.
Harry Gary Watson is a Masterton-based artist with a unique point of view. His work combines painting and carving, the modern and the primitive, to provide the viewer with quirky, subversive narratives that explore Aotearoa's colonial and post-colonial history. His work hangs in premium galleries across New Zealand, and he's had solo shows in Auckland, Wellington, and just last year here in Masterton's Aratoi. In February this year, Harry opened his very own dealer gallery, the Watson Gallery, at 2 Perry Street in Masterton. Before I met Harry, I'd naively assumed that the idea of opening a gallery would be heralded by at least a bit of planning or forethought. But no, it turns out inspiration can strike at any time. Here in your wonderful art space, the Watson Gallery, would you just describe to me how it came about that the Watson Gallery is here now, 2 Perry Street?
Okay, well, I knew someone who was looking for a flat. And I feel for people looking for flats because it's they're not easy to find. So I thought an extra pair of legs might help her. But lo and behold, it wasn't a flat. I saw it as a future gallery. And I happened to be standing there, so I said I'd take it. It was completely spur of the moment. There was no plan whatsoever to own a gallery or to run a gallery, but I kind of jumped.
Yeah. And so it just spoke to you as you walked, you know, you kind of got here and thought, wow. Could you kind of visualise it? Could you see?
Yes.
Wow, that's powerful.
It was the space. The space was like, I grew up in Wellington, and my mother used to take me to the Peter McCleavy Gallery. And I had a friend who worked for Peter McCleavy, and he opened a gallery in Auckland. And both of those galleries had the kind of feel that this building does. And as an artist, and now as a dealer, I feel, and in a similar building to which I grew up, I feel full circle. I have a shrine that I can share with people, a shrine to art. I had 50-50 thoughts for a day, and I thought, well, I might regret it if I open a gallery, but I know I will regret it if I don't. So it was pretty clear from the outset.
Yeah. And that was February 2020?
Mm-hmm. February this year.
So just before a major pandemic, Harry.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did the pandemic and COVID and level 4 kind of impact on you being able to get up and running?
I had to stay away for roughly a month, but over that time I had a sellout show from my first artist, apart from myself. I had the first show. The second show was Jason Burns, and that's pretty much sold out. So the gallery's doing a bit better than breaking even. Despite COVID, despite the winter, and despite being new, and despite being unknown.
Well, you're not really unknown, are you? You're not unknown.
No, the gallery is unknown.
So I think you're a major draw. When you created this gallery and you had the first show, did it kind of pan out in your mind? You knew exactly what artists you'd like to exhibit here?
Yes. My own work in the first show is not going to happen again. I have galleries elsewhere in New Zealand that I show my work in, so I don't need to do that. The artist must make work like no other. I think that's the criteria. If I'm drawn enough to it, if I love it enough, and if it's unique enough, I'm not selling anything. I'm not a salesperson. I will naturally enthuse, and that's what I love about a dealer gallery. A good dealer gallery should have a very deep-seated non-commercial streak, where it's the passion for a certain artist and their work.
Currently exhibiting work like no other at the Watson Gallery is Bill Taylor. Here's Harry describing the work Bill is sharing in his exhibition, Tide Rack.
Bill collects driftwood from around New Zealand in his travels, and he's subtitled a story, Messages from the Sea. So he looks at a piece of driftwood and he speculates about where it might have come from, who might have handled it, what it was used for, and then he places his small, what he calls a small contribution onto that driftwood, which is a very moody style of horizon lines.
Mm.
He also does a marine alphabet, sets the letters into the driftwood.
Like inlay, isn't it?
Inlaid, yeah.
And the quality of the paint on the driftwood of these panels that we can see in your office, I mean, it's kind of like an enamel. They're very kind of sharp, and yeah, you want to touch it because they're so shiny and yeah, crisp.
Yeah, and the reflect, it's built up after layer of layer and layer and layer of acrylic enamel. And then it's given an acrylic lacquer. And you're right, yes, they are shiny, and what happens when you walk past them is those reflections ping up and down the artwork as you walk past. It's like if you were completely enclosed in a room with only one window, you'd feel like you were at the sea by walking past these.
Yes.
You'd feel like the sunlight was glittering off the sea.
Has developed a unique take on the gallery newsletter. He creates regular videos with the help of his friends Harry and Harriet. While I was there, I was lucky enough to be introduced to the whole team.
Harriet, you come over here a minute, Harriet.
What do you want now?
This lovely lady here wants to know a bit about our videos.
Well, that's not my job. I'm an artist, don't you know, darling, and I'm going up to the gallery.
All right, Harriet, off you go then. Well, that was Harriet. She can be a bit harsh.
Yeah, she's a handful, eh?
Yeah, yeah. And we've also got Harry, who's an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Harry, can you come over here a minute? Oh, what do you want? Can you describe our videos for this lovely person? Oh, no, not really, I don't know. You're the one that does it all. I don't care, I just want to go home and paint. All right, Harry, off you go then.
They're not very helpful to you.
No, they're not. but Harry's been known to do the odd vacuuming sometimes.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
And Harriet just hangs around trying to look arty, which is her job, really.
Yeah.
Her job is to be arty.
And how long have Harry and Harriet been part of your family?
Since the gallery opened.
Okay. Oh, so yeah, they're a relatively new acquisition.
Yeah. They are their own response to the gallery. I like to have a slag at the art world, basically. It's kind of like if you walk into a room and you do not feel comfortable, and you're dressed a certain way, and you do not feel comfortable, there are galleries like that, where the look on the person's face is, you can't afford anything that's in here. And it's true of theatre. It's true of building, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to use that drill, mate. That's just a piece of crap. So it's everywhere. That's what I like to slag off.
Yes.
And make fun of, is people's affectations.
Yeah, yeah.
Uppertiness.
Yep, snobbiness.
Snobbiness.
You know, certainly as a viewer of art, I understand that sensation of being made to feel that you're not welcome. And it's not helpful.
No.
No.
No, I think there's a lot of art speak as well, which I'm going to have a go at in the future. The world's my oyster there, because they make words up. They try and complicate it and shut people out. I had one potential customer came up and said they don't understand art. I said, neither do I. Why would I? Mm. You don't need to understand art. He said he went into Aratoi, saw a painting, and it affected him for some hours afterwards.
Yeah.
I said, that's all you need to know. That is all you need to know. You do not have to understand the artist's intention.
No.
You have to understand how you feel. What your response is valid. Your response is the main thing
mm-hmm.
as somebody who wants to own a piece of art.
So that was Harry.
Lovely. What a character.
He is a real character. A really nice guy.
I was quite confused there for a minute.
Yeah, Harry and Harriet
awesome.
Were him.
Yeah, I got that now.
Yeah, so definitely go and check. So there is another part two. There's a part two to that interview, which we'll play another time, but they'll all be available on the blog and via Facebook. So do check him out and do check out the gallery. I mean, this guy is seriously well connected. The artwork that he has in there currently, Bill Taylor's work, is just delicious. And I have no doubt that, you know, Harry will keep pulling out the big guns. He's a really cool dude, very nice, and he really, really wants people to just embrace and enjoy art. You know, he has no side to him whatsoever.
Yeah.
And check out his Harry and Harriet videos. So in those videos, you met Harry and Harriet in that interview, and they will just they usually have a lot of rows, but they do tell you what's coming up in the gallery in the coming month, and it's just hilarious. And he's just, you know, I just like what's it, iconoclastic, you know, there's something, you know, he just wants to kind of just smash down all those silly,
yeah.
A bit like what we were talking about with Jen, really,
yeah.
You know, around all those kind of false pretenses that surround culture and art, which only serve to keep people at arm's length. Mm. Yeah. Let's talk to somebody about mindfulness, shall we?
Mm.
We're going to call Sarah Firth and we're going to talk to her about her business. So she is in the business of mindfulness, and I'm just going to do that now. I've just got to get into the phone. Hang on one second. One second. Please hold caller. Right. Here's her number. I'm going to turn up the phone and I'm going to call. So, Sarah, I hope you're ready. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Please ring, please ring. Yes, it's ringing. I think it's going to ring. Is it? Oh, I can't hear. Oh, here she goes. Lovely. You've won a competition.
Hello, Lucy.
Hello, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
We're good. And Katie's here as well.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, good, thanks.
So good of you to join us. Thank you so much. I know it's very late at night, and I know that you've got children and you've got a life to lead and sleep to have, but we couldn't let level two here and level three in Auckland go without hearing from somebody who's practiced in the way of mindfulness. So, Sarah, you are based in Martinborough, and what's the name of your kind of business entity where you dish out the mindfulness?
Yes, so I do that through Sarah Firth Coaching, and I started that coaching business not sure that I was going to make mindfulness a big part of it, but it's just taken off. There's just so many people who want it and need it and are asking for it.
Absolutely. And what do you put that down to? And was this pre-COVID that people were really kind of clamoring for some mindfulness, or for, you know, to be kind of put in touch with their, you know, those kind of a softer inner self, or have you really seen a peak as a consequence of COVID?
I think it was starting to take off just before COVID, from my point of view anyway, here in New Zealand. And there was a lot more training out there available for people to learn about mindfulness, and especially within the workplace. And I guess that's kind of where I got interested in it, because I was coaching people who we're looking to be able to manage the feelings of overwhelm within the workplace and stress, and turning to mindfulness was a big part of that.
And you know, mindfulness is a word a bit like well-being and sustainable. You know, it's becoming, you know, very much in common parlance. But can you tell us what is mindfulness for people who kind of, you know, it's washed over them and hasn't sunk in? What is it?
Yeah, it definitely is one of those words that people hear a lot, but can't put their finger on. So I guess the definition I like to use is one that John Kabat-Zinn, he's a doctor and he is a bit of a guru in the mindfulness space. So I really like his definition that says paying attention on purpose to the present moment in a non-judgmental way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically just that, paying attention on purpose to the present moment that you're in.
Got it. And so I like that kind of in a non-judgmental way, because often we can be quite hard on ourselves, can't we? We can be hard on ourselves and on others.
Definitely. It's that recognizing that we are not always our thoughts, and being able to step back a little bit from any kind of reaction that we might have. And I really like the idea of being able to respond to those big emotions in a way that's more intentional rather than going with that reaction. Mm. Kind of giving that space to do that.
And how did you encounter mindfulness? What's been your journey to get there?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a weaving journey when I was thinking about it, but I guess I was feeling like I was always taking on, you know, a lot more than I could chew in a way, but not wanting to change that necessarily, but being able to find some clarity as I was doing it. So I looked at a lot of different types of meditation and yoga, and because what I was reading was leading me that way. And then I came across mindfulness meditation, and it just seemed like such an easy way to connect with the present moment. And it also has a lot of scientific backing, and there's some amazing research done into MRI scans about people who have done kind of 8-week courses on mindfulness meditation, and being able to see those changes in the brain in the MRI scan kind of got me really interested.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it's that science, isn't it, that's behind it. A lot of people would think, oh, you know, it's just, you know, a bit of breathing and kind of being quiet. You know, what kind of impact can it have? Yeah. But what kind of impact is it having on people? What can the science see when they look at somebody who's, being mindful?
Yes. So, I mean, one of the MRI scans shows that after an 8-week kind of mindfulness, attention, meditation training, the amygdala, which is our fight or flight response in our brain, is activated less after they've done that training. So it's firing off less, and people are just feeling that calmness, that that clarity. And some of the other benefits are boosting the memory and focus. Mm. People who've done some training and are looking into mindfulness, as well as increasing cognitive flexibility, which is kind of that self-awareness. And mindfulness being able to activate areas of the brain that are associated to more of the adaptive responses to negative situations. So being able to take that step back is what's showing up in the science.
Yeah, and that's so important, isn't it? I think also, you know, the pace at which we live and technology being always at our fingertips, everybody around us seems to be reacting instantly. Yeah. News reacts instantly. You know, it must be, you know, it's hard,
and
isn't it?
And it feeds off, the more you get out of that cortisol firing and things like that, the more you need it and the more you want it. So I guess mindfulness is another way to be able to just stay in that present moment rather than dwelling on things that might have happened in the past or thinking too far ahead in the future in a way that doesn't help you. Yeah.
So that's really interesting, isn't it? That kind of addictive quality of stress. Mm. And I was reading an article on the BBC. They have a really great kind of work stream of news, and they were talking about overwork or, not sleeping, just working all the time is addictive. And people kind of, and exactly what you're saying, they work too hard, and then they need to work more to kind of get that kick that they kind of get, even though it's destroying them and their relationships around them. You know, they just can't get off that horse. And I think people worry, don't they? It's like a massive cultural FOMO, that if we actually take time to be in the present moment, we're going to miss something.
yeah. And it's, again, about being able to take the time to assess what you really want. There's a great book by Dan Harris called 10% Happier. And it's just always wanting more, but why? And why, if we're not able to enjoy the present moment that we're in, do we keep striving for more? Really interesting.
There's JOMO now, Lucy.
JOMO?
Yeah, joy of missing out.
Joy of missing. I've totally had that since COVID, since lockdown level 4. I love staying in. Yeah. And I was one of those people that was a little bit addicted to doing and being busy and annoying. What changes have you noticed, Sarah, since lockdown level four? And I know that Auckland, poor things, that you know, are in a light lockdown at the moment. But what have you noticed? Have you noticed more people wanting to kind of, you know, deliberately take that time to be in the present moment?
Yes, I think a lot of people are reassessing or looking at why they do what they do, mm-hmm. how they structure their days, why they worked or work the way that they do. So, yeah, I think that people are ready to make a change. But I have also seen a little bit of a slip back. So just before our re-lockdown, I guess, there's ebbs and waves, and it's kind of being able to look back, but in a way that's still enjoying the present moment.
Your business, I know that you're currently engaged, you've got a course running Love and Core. Can you tell us a bit more about that course?
Yeah, so it's a 6-week course we're calling Everyday Mindfulness, and I'm doing that with Marijke Kershaw, who's a coach and facilitator.
Oh, I met her the other day. She's lovely.
Yeah, it's very cool to be able to do it, the two of us as well, because we can get quite in depth and be able to really talk through the elements of mindfulness. Mm. So we're up to our third week coming up, and our third week's going to be on acceptance and letting go. Oh. Our first week was on presence and learning to be with ourselves. And the second week was self-awareness. So we're going to be working through each of the core, I guess, pillars of mindfulness. And it's a group of 12 of us, and we try and make it really conversational. And then at the end of each hour, we do a guided meditation, but it's just really easy. It's kind of just focusing on your breath, mm-hmm. as we talked about, but doing that in an intentional way just to kind of ground you. There's a really big feeling of clarity and grounding that you can get from that short meditation.
And in the 3 weeks that you've done of the course so far, what have you noticed in some of the people that you're working with in terms of their journey?
Yeah, so what we try and do is, well, we ask everyone to engage in everyday mindfulness as well as coming through the course. And we've noticed that lots of people are finding new joy, and they're kind of approaching things a little bit with what we call a beginner's mind, which is like you imagine your child again, or seeing something for the first time that you might not have seen. One of the exercises we did was eating a raisin, which sounds hilarious, and it is. It's quite hilarious. I challenge everyone to try and eat a raisin and only think about that raisin as you eat it. It's pretty amazing.
Wow.
It's fun. Yeah. So I think, people are just finding a lot more joy in the present moment so far.
Yeah. Like it. That's wonderful. Is there something that you could talk to us over the radio? Like, if somebody was sitting at home and said, I just want to give this a quick go, is there something that you can talk us through? We won't actually do it, but maybe just give us the tenets of what we would need to do if we wanted to just dip our toe in the mindfulness pool.
Definitely. So we've got one exercise that's called the RAIN exercise. And it's something that you can do if you find yourself maybe getting swept up in a bit of feelings of anxiety or kind of any big emotion. If you start to feel triggered that you're going down a bit of a spiral of thinking too far ahead or catastrophic thinking or some negative thoughts, if that starts happening, you can remind yourself of an acronym, that RAIN. So R is recognize. So when you're thinking about the recognize, you recognize the emotion that's present. So you might want to name it as well. So it could be fear, could be anger, all sorts of things. And then the next letter is A, which is allow. And then this one, just allow the emotion to be what it is.
Okay.
It's allow and accept. We're human and we all have emotions, and all those emotions have a role to play for us. So then we move on to I, which is investigate. So once you've accepted that emotion that you've recognised, you can then investigate the inner experience with kind of gentle attention. So you don't need to push it too far, but maybe investigate that trigger a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we end with N, which is non-identify and nurture. So you just want to kind of remind yourself that you're not your feelings and just be kind to yourself.
Yeah.
The reins are really useful one if you can remember that.
Absolutely. And that seems accessible for adults, kids. You know, you can talk your kids yeah. through it if they're having, you know, a mini meltdown or even a major one.
Yeah. If you've got younger kids, there's also the five senses exercise if we've got time for like another minute.
Yes, yeah. Please do. Tell us.
Yeah. Well, so for kids, if you can kind of feel that energy where things might start turning south. I do this one with my daughter Evie, who's five, and we say, what's five you can see? And then they name five things they can see. The next one's four things that they can touch, and then you can do three things they can hear, and then two things they can smell, and then one thing they can taste. So it doesn't really matter which order you do it in. It's usually easier to start with the seeing.
Yeah.
But you've got 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 with each of the senses and get them to talk about it out loud. And it just brings everything back to where you are in the present moment.
That's lovely. And Evie responds well to the five things?
She does. We usually take a breath first. It's not meant to be a distraction per se. It's meant to be grounding, but she loves doing it. And she also has done it enough now to know that it is time to take a breath.
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. That's and have you, you know, as your practice grows, How do you kind of keep in touch with what's going on in the mindfulness world? Because, you know, as you mentioned, there's a lot of science, there's a lot of, you know, great work being done out there. Do you have your own mindfulness coach that you can turn to?
Yes, I do. I did my training through a group called OVIO, and Cheryl Strawbridge runs that out of Wellington. And so she trains the trainers, and we've got, you know, the Facebook groups and our own kind of training and coaching that goes on behind the scenes for that, which is really good. But honestly, teaching it, I feel more like it's sharing it and just talking about it with you guys. It always brings, you know, you back to yourself, and it's part of, my practice as well. But I also like to do things like gratitude journaling and things like that when I can, but I always just try and remind myself to take a moment to recognise where I am.
Mm. Katie, Recuperate's co-host, you're a very mindful person. I mean, you often practice, you know, various mindful techniques.
Yeah, try to. Gratitude journals definitely helped me in the past with depression and anxiety. It's a wonderful tool. Mm. And, guided meditation and visualization I tried, where I don't know if how that fits in with mindful practice. Do you do visualization type exercises?
I think we do, but that's usually when we go into like the loving kindness.
Right.
So so we visualize kind things for others and for ourselves, but a lot of it is just concentrating on the anchoring.
Yeah.
Visualization is an amazing practice to do.
I found it really helpful to work out abstract concepts and things that you can't get your head around with your own conscious brain, I suppose, and then it's seeing it that way. It gives you a whole different perspective. It's pretty cool.
Mm.
Your course that you're doing now, are you going to have another one? Has it filled up places? Or because I only found out about it after the fact, and I would have loved to have done it.
Usually the way, isn't it?
Yeah.
I definitely think we're going to do something in the summer as well. We fully booked out, which
that's wonderful.
I was really happy. So I think we've got a little waiting list for the next course, and if anyone wants to get in touch, I can let them know when we're doing that.
We'll also be
doing a couple of retreats if we can as well in the summer.
Okay, awesome. At Love and Core or at a venue in Martinborough?
Yeah, so before COVID hit the first time, I had one planned for Peppers Parahua.
Yes.
So in Martinborough, but at Peppers as well. So that was a half-day retreat with some yummy food. And then
that was for March. And it all went south.
So that was definitely a time to try and practice mindfulness myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to decide whether or not to call it off. We'll do more.
Awesome.
And we can keep in touch with you via Facebook. You've got a Facebook page, haven't you? Sarah Firth Coaching.
Coaching.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, that's awesome. That'd be great.
And just you mentioned earlier on that, you know, you've been working with businesses and just what are the benefits for a workplace if people are able to be more mindful or practice mindfulness?
Mm. Yeah, so that stress reduction one has definitely shown that there's less kind of workplace I guess overwhelm and fatigue and burnout.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big one. They kind of talk about it as first aid in a way, doing mindfulness through a workplace, and it can definitely lead to less absences. We've found that through some surveys that's been done. It can also increase that focus and that clarity that people can have, and that always helps. And we talk a lot about mind wandering as being the opposite of mindfulness, and being able to focus and do less of the multitasking leads to such big benefit in the workplace in terms of less errors, that kind of thing.
Oh, that's awesome. It's been really nice.
I've got another question.
Go on, go for it. Go for it.
Sarah, I was just wondering if you'd seen anything in the school, or if you, I don't know how old your children are, but if they're school age or early childhood, have you seen anything in that space of mindfulness for children coming into the school curriculum? Or I know I'd love to see it as a parent to be more intertwined in what they do every day, which I think would be wonderful, especially now with all the anxieties there are.
So we can train for children a mindfulness program for children through OVO as well. I haven't done that yet, but I definitely want to. I'm seeing a lot more schools mentioning it, and especially over lockdown as well, doing things like connecting with senses and that kind of thing, but not necessarily mindfulness within the curriculum, as far as I know.
Mm.
But I think it would be amazing to do. I'd love if we could do that. There's some yoga classes going on after school in Martinborough at the moment for kind of 6 to 12-year-olds as well, which is another great way to experience mindfulness in using movement as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Maybe one of your next projects.
Yeah. It's on the list.
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. Mindfully getting through your list. Awesome. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, Sarah. Maybe next time we can get you in the studio, we'll maybe have you on a bit earlier in the future. We'd love to keep in touch with you and just, you know, kind of keep in touch with things. I'm certainly really interested in this area of mindfulness. I've been practicing a bit of meditation for the past 103 days, and I've noticed I don't know if anybody else has, but I definitely know that it has made a huge impact on the way I just approach things. And I feel a lot more relaxed. I didn't realise I wasn't that relaxed, but I am. I'm getting better at that. I'm getting better at being a grown up. So I put this down to mindfulness, I'm sure. So thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. Do stay in touch, and we'll make sure that we have some links to your entity, your business, on our Facebook page.
So people can find
thank
out your
you
next
so
courses.
Thanks for having me, Katie and Lucy.
Oh, you're welcome.
You're welcome. You take care and have a lovely evening.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Bye bye.
Well, we might have to sign up for that next course.
Yeah, that sounds awesome, eh?
Yeah.
What a lovely lady. I don't know, did you notice that when she started talking about, you know, when I asked her to do an actual mindfulness, like her voice went very much softer, and I don't know, you could see that she was going into
the zone.
The zone mode. Yeah, totally. That was awesome. We don't have many minutes left.
Oh.
It was funny when she talked about, I use the Headspace app.
Mm.
And I tried a bit of mindful eating, except I was so hungry.
Oh, no.
I couldn't do it. And no. I didn't know it was going to take that long. And so in the end, I'm just shoveling it in while he's saying, "And just smell the food." I'm one step ahead of you, Andy.
I'd done a couple of times in different courses and environments, done a mindfulness eating with a piece of chocolate.
Oh, yes.
Which I would normally wouldn't, you know, wouldn't hang around in my mouth. It's really, rather than a raisin, which I don't think would be that pleasant, but chocolate mindfulness is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's another iteration of that exercise.
And
you have to let it melt in your mouth and then smell and taste and touch. And
wow.
Yeah. To melt a piece of chocolate in your mouth, you can imagine, takes quite a while.
It does.
So, yeah.
It's and the temptation just to bite into it and... all in one go.
I'm thinking about chocolate now.
Oh, I know, same. And we haven't got any. Had a lovely cup of tea earlier on, but the cupboard is bare when it comes to snacks. Oh, and I've eaten all my Skittles.
Mm. You had ice cream on the way out.
Oh, that's right. I did, didn't I?
Oh, how quickly.
Seems like a long... It's been a cracking show. I think we've got time for a very short piece of music.
Oh, sure,
what
sure.
do you think?
Let's have... I've discovered this the other day, and it's a cheerful note to end on.
Yeah.
No, I'm just trying to find... It's the first... Should be the first song.
Let's have a look. Okay. I've gone and lost my doodacky. My app off my phone. Hang on. My back started to hurt again. It's because we haven't got Vivaldi on.
No.
Oh, too darn hot.
That's the one. All so this is Ella Fitzgerald re-envisioned by some... Or Verve as a DJ, I suppose, or a group of... But it's all reworking the great female artists, so...
Great.
Quite like this.
Okay, let's play this.
In the spirit of bringing old to new.
Yes.
A toast to Jen.
Absolute. To Jen.
Thank you.
that was a great way to end the show, Katie. Thank you so much. That was brilliant.
Yes.
Loved it. It's been a great night. We're going to go now.
I'm freaked out. We just heard a knocking.
Yeah, we just heard a knocking.
Is it knocking?
I think it's going to be fine.
If you don't make it home, find us.
Yeah, totally. We've had a great night. You were listening to Jen Olsen with the music. Then we heard an interview with Harry Watson. And then the wonderful Sarah Firth ended the show. And that great track. And we are looking forward to next month. Do keep in touch with us on Recuperate on the Facebook. And I don't know what that was, sorry. On the Facebook. And also we have a blog, recuperate.com. And because this show went relatively without a hitch, it's definitely going on the blog. So okay. Yep, and LinkedIn.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. You take care. Thank you so much. Goodbye.